you're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Those radio losers, nobody cares about them.
Afternoons on the Score.
3-2. Out to center. Walking back to the bag is Jimenez. He will tag at third. Here could no throw, and that's the ball game. Emil Jimenez caught both ways next time. That's terrible. That's terrible. Ball game's over. Walking it off, and the White Sox lose the opener.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so gotta be honest. Didn't see it live. Saw it about 5 minutes, 10 minutes after it happened. It was a really, really, really weird ending to that game.
Yeah, I did not see it live. I was at Cubs last night, and my phone started blowing up about it. Had not heard the TV call because I'd gone on and watched the condensed game on MLB.com and seen some other stuff. Didn't realize the umpire got some ire there after.
Well, the at bat, it was an 0-2 count, and Kopech threw a ball that looked like a strike on the K-Vision that came across just at the bottom of the zone. And so it looked like it should have been a 3-pitch punch out. And the game would have obviously remained tied. But then he spiked a pitch.
Yeah, and I saw that. Like, he caught a spike on the mound on the way down.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, I think what he's referring to is the non-strike three call.
Yes.
The non-strike three call, which was a great pitch. It probably was a strike, but again, we don't have automated balls and strikes in a world where there's a challenge system. If you still had a challenge left, you'd use that one, and it probably would have gotten overturned based on the TV graphic. Anyway, based on the TV graphic, it was a strike. But it was so weird, and it's game of inches, all of those cliches, man. Like, it's a great at bat by Kopech. It's a great job. Like, if that pitch is called a strike, 3-pitch strikeout, runner in scoring position, stranded, inning over, you know, tie game. Then it's 1-2. The next pitch, he spikes the ball, throws it 2 feet, and the training staff comes out. Like, what the hell was that? Did you hurt yourself? Like, so now all of a sudden it's like, okay, things are unraveling. There's a runner on third instead of second because he, you know, wild pitched it.
And we're under two outs, so all you need is the sacrifice fly to have the winning run come in.
Correct. And so by the way, I guess if that would have been strike three call, it would not have been a guarantee that they would have gotten out of it, but you would have not had the spiked ball, which would have had the runner advance to third, and you would have needed a base hit with two outs to win instead of the sacrifice fly. And then the sacrifice fly happens, and Luis Robert doesn't get under the ball and even make a throw. Probably was too deep to matter anyway, but
not
you've got
to
make a play.
You have to make a play. And just a chaotically, dim thought from Luis to not get under it. And what we have seen is him not doing some of the basic fundamentals of center field play for a long, long time. I mean, it's got to be 4 years. At least 3 years since I remember going off on a rant about him not getting under a fly ball to make a throw specifically for a sacrifice fly and being so angry. I remember still the visceral anger of being like, Darryl Boston is a loyalty hire who remains as a as an outfield coach and a base coach who obviously is not teaching these guys anything, and they have to learn at the big league level because the farm system is bad. But anyway, here we are this far into the dude's career, a five-tool player supposedly, not knowing and executing fundamentally what you're supposed to do was absolutely horrific to watch on that play.
Yeah, it was really, really bad. Again, you said it doesn't matter. If the ball would have been hit 380 feet,
we're
you're
saying
not trying.
What doesn't matter?
You said it doesn't matter that the ball was probably too deep that he can't even make the runner's scoring either way.
Well, what I mean is you make the throw because a guy could fall, a guy could trip.
Correct.
I mean, anything could happen.
Miss home plate.
Hey, you could miss home plate, and then you've got him. I mean. You get under it. It's the fundamentals of like, all right, get under and when that ball hits your glove, you are ready to have just that little crow hop and throw. You're in position.
You're charging into the ball so that you can get maximum velocity on the throw to give yourself a chance, even if it's a 1% or 2% chance.
I remember being the bat boy for my older brother's high school team when they had outfield practice and he was being taught how to deal with a sacrifice fly. And then we would watch the Red Sox outfield of Fred Lynn and Jim Rice and Dwight Evans, and they all did it right. I mean, what the hell? It's still the most basic stuff in baseball, and the White Sox are such a broken organization that absolute jewels of the team come all the way up and still don't know how to do it when they've been in the big leagues for years. It's insane.
Well, I'm sure Tom Hamilton, who's had a thought or three on the White Sox from afar, I'm sure he handled the call with an appropriate amount of grace.
Now the 0-2. And it just missed low. If it did miss... One ball, two strikes. I don't think the White Sox are inviting Emil Jimenez to their team party later this year. The 1-2. And it goes all the way to the backstop. And it went behind the batter as Kopech stumbled, making his delivery to home plate. And now the winning run at third. May have caught a spike in delivering that ball as it just went flying out of his hand to the backstop behind the hitter. He almost fell down delivering it. And now the winning run 90 feet from home, and now the White Sox have to bring the infield in. A 2-2 count. One out. A 6-6 game in the ninth. And now Charlie Montoyo, the bench coach and former Toronto Blue Jays manager, is coming out to the mound with the White Sox trainer to make sure Kopech is okay. One out, 6-6 in the ninth. Everybody on their feet at the corner of Carnegie and Ontario. Kopech is ready. Here's the 2-2 pitch. High, and he almost threw it away. Martin Maldonado with a leaping grab, and the count is full. And for Kopech, he may be a little bit rattled. He's uncorked 5 wild pitches this year. Winning run at third and a full count with one down in the ninth. The payoff pitch. A swing and a high fly, medium deep center. This will be interesting. Robert makes the catch, tagging Jimenez. The throw to the plate, nowhere near in time. Ball game is over. A game-winning sacrifice fly. As Bo Naylor walks off the White Sox twice, Luis Robert took a strange approach to that fly ball to medium deep center. He drifted back on it. He never went back, then charged it with his momentum taking him to home plate. And the Guardians get a bizarre win tonight on a sack fly by Bo Naylor and beat the White Sox 7-6.
So odd.
Dude, so we're tracking new ways for the White Sox to lose.
Yeah.
Add it to the list.
Yeah, man. Like they continue to be an improv comic giving you absolute gold nightly. They're the Robin Williams of losing. And that is a new one. I've never seen the sacrifice fly where they don't even bother to make a throw.
Well, you have, but it's like when it's been like I said, 380 feet. You know what I mean? When it's super deep, when you're going back on a ball, like when there's no chance for it. But a ball at that depth, there's always a throw in.
Even then, I feel like they turn and they throw it just in case dude falls down or in case something happens. It's like, certainly not at that depth. Does he not care? You'd never want to put that on a guy.
It's a horrible look.
It's a horrible look, and it's frankly just a really weird bad baseball instinct to show off and add to the pile as the trade deadline approaches. It really is. I saw a lot of that online actually.
The clip was circulating on a few of the MLB accounts, not the official Major League Baseball accounts, but the foul territories and the MLB social media channels. And I was just checking the comments, and it was like a lot of Phillies fans being like, "Eh, no thanks," for whatever that's worth, which is probably nothing, but definitely a lot of teams that are in the buyer's market that have seen reports of Robert being available that have had their team linked to him, seeing that play and be like, "Ugh." That's unappetizing.
And Pedro Grifol after the game said that it was too deep, right? Said it was too deep, and it's just, you shouldn't even be picking
apart. He did not
take
a public stance of having a problem with it. No.
Yeah. Because the thing is,
Robert had a really good game offensively. He said he didn't think he had a chance in the last play. Is that what you kind of said?
First of all, he's playing in, because there's one out. Ball was hit 309 feet, 310 feet. He's playing in, he's going back. Even if he runs back and comes in, there's no play there. I mean, if we're going to dissect that, we're making something out of nothing, really. You're not going to throw that guy out from there.
All right, cutting his guy a break, making an apology for his guy. I mean, that fits. Look, Pedro has not said anything publicly. I mean, other than the one time where he said we are flat and effing flat, and and his own guys were like, "No, we were not. We very much disagree with that." I mean, Pedro has stood by his guys to complete and utter extents.
Yeah,
man.
I mean, I'd like to know. I mean, is there? There's got to be data. There's data on your sport for everything. On deepest fly ball, where a guy has been thrown out at the plate, it probably would have taken tripping and falling, missing home plate, rupturing an Achilles. You know what I mean? It probably would have taken an act of God.
Look, it's just the latest example of innumerable examples of them in terms of fundamental things. And just when you have an org that is broken from the top on down in like how to build stuff, how to teach stuff, how to deliver finished products, or at least mostly finished products, to the big leagues, you get stuff like this. When you have chaos like all through your organization, and maybe the new guys, Barfield and Bannister, and yes, Getz can try to right a ship, but it is a big operation that takes years to set up correctly. And when it's not set up correctly, you get stuff like this as just a symptom where your best player, your five-tool jewel, has a moment like that. And we're all realizing what an incomplete player he actually is. So what a bummer, man.
The other high-profile White Sox who's been linked in trade stuff, this from Scott Merkin 15 minutes ago, who covers the Sox, asked Pedro if Crochet's last first-half start could be Saturday in Miami, again watching his innings. His reply, quote, "We have it mapped out in a way where if he's selected to the All-Star game, he'll be available to pitch. I think that's extremely important."
That's cool.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if the team was in contention and he was on this innings limit, you'd want it saved. But given that he's having beyond a career year, one of the best seasons of any pitcher in all of baseball, and you're going exactly nowhere, let the guy have the moment of using an inning in the All-Star game. I think that's totally fine.
Yeah. I hope for Sox fan this org finds a way to drag itself out of the muck and become something more than a laughing stock.
Yeah, me too. And that's my problem with perpetual rebuilds is when you get these prospects, they're coming from all these different systems. And it's like, why are these teams giving up on these guys? Sometimes it's because they don't know how to play baseball the right way. And they're learning the game from different people
yes. In
different orgs. So when they all come here, no one's on the same page almost ever. And like you said, Speaks, hopefully they're beginning now because I know they've got smart people in place. Mm-hmm. But that stuff takes years.
Right. Did you guys cover this? It was a day that I was off. The stuff that Tobias Myers, who's been a nice surprise as a pitcher for the Brewers, said in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the White Sox. Because he was there in 2022 and it didn't go well.
I know we talked about it in the group thread that day. I don't remember if we did it on the show, Danny.
Yeah, I think it didn't make the show that day.
Seven starts for Tobias Myers when he was with the White Sox in the minors. An ERA north of 15 and got DFA'd back to the market. And Myers has been a big part of what the Brewers have done. They're scrambling, but he's been a nice part of what the Brewers have done. Here's what Myers said about the White Sox in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last week. Quote, "They just can't help anyone, in my opinion. Maybe they've changed a little bit since then, but I always tell people now that if you don't have anything figured out, don't go to the White Sox," unquote. Now that's a dude who's been DFA'd by a bunch of people, bounced around a bunch of organizations, and it's rough because a lot of these guys, they become creations when an organization unlocks something or figures something out, whether it's a pitch mix or they teach them something or they find something technically or whatever it is. And he's not the first one, nor will he be the last one to voice that opinion about the White Sox, that they're just not going to fix you when you get here. Remember Lucas Giolito going outside the org. Remember Danny Farquhar coming back from a time in Tampa Bay, and they're like, "Oh, you know stuff you learned in Tampa? Would you please now just work for us instead as a pitcher on a redemption trip?"
They ended up giving him power. That's what Bannister was supposed to change, though.
Yeah, but it's baseball's a big bus that makes a slow turn. I hope that Bannister can change some stuff. But it's kind of like asking counsel to be like a partner of a GM and fix a whole bunch of things in the organization in half a year. You know, it's like it's a big bus and it makes a slow turn.
You went to a baseball game with a member of the Rolling Stones last night. We haven't gotten nearly enough stories about that. We have Peter's Ponderings in 20 minutes, and this is going to shock exactly no one. But Spiegs is getting a little sports sentimental. Those are the kind of vibes we need around these parts with all these bad teams we're covering. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Doing it and doing it and doing it.
Afternoons on the Score.
Draymond, you are such a...
Clay Thompson, yup. Splash Brothers, yup. Cavaliers, nope. We won, yup. They suck, yup. We here, yup. They not, nope.
Thank you, Draymond.
The last Peter Ponderings coming up as we lose the intern, Peter Hansen, to the morning show after two valiant weeks with us. But Spiegs, you are a bit of a romantic, a bit of an optimist, and you found yourself feeling sadness at the end of one of the great dynasties and at times unfair cheat codes in modern sports history being broken up.
You're laughing at me, Danny.
I am laughing at you a little bit.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
Yeah. It's not nice.
I'm sorry.
At a time of sadness.
I know.
Yeah. It's your game.
This is bringing you great pain in your life.
It's actually not bringing me great pain. Just a little sports sadness. You ever just truly love a team that is not one of your own locally? And every time you get a chance to watch them, they bring you an incredible amount of joy. It hasn't been as joyful, obviously, in the last year or two, but I've still found myself believing in them because of the joy that I've always gotten. Watching Steph Curry and Klay Thompson play, especially under Steve Kerr, has been some of the most beautiful basketball and some of the most beautiful team sports that I feel like we've gotten to watch as a people in a long, long time. Yes, the fact that they were for a while the best and probably second best shooter in the game, and we will go with Steph as the best shooter of all time, and Klay in his prime as one of the best shooters of all time. Yes, that was a massive cheat code, but it was just
Well, I was talking about that when the cap spiked and then they added Kevin Durant, one of the 10 best offensive players of all time.
But I'm thinking about when they won it with Iguodala, when Sean Livingston had a new chapter of his career and won a title there. You know, just like all the different people that have cycled through there. And yes, Durant was definitely a bit of a cheat code that felt like a star gathering thing that I've often loathed, and then all of a sudden was in there. But it's largely about Steph, and it's about the way that Steph and Clay have played together, and a weird kind of selflessness from a very odd figure in Draymond. It's a very weird brand of selflessness, because maybe it's...
You and Draymond actually have something in common.
Yeah, what's that?
On the Draymond Green show, he's emotional breaking up of the Splash Brothers.
I don't really know how I feel about it. Clay told us last week, I don't know who all he told, but I know he talked to me. Pretty sure he talked to Steph last week. And he just kind of was like, yeah, man, like, you know, just kind of start talking through the years, like, been great. What we've done is so special. Like, when Clay told me, I was just able to listen, you know, and it wasn't like a, yo, we could finish like this, or like, you should rethink this. It was just like, wow, like, all right, like, congrats, bro. Like, I'm happy for you. That's dope. And like, you know, to obviously reassure that changes nothing for us, you know, like, changes the basketball court, obviously. But the relationships, they are what they are. They are forever. I think I might have dropped a couple tears, a tear or two.
Man, I feel you, Draymond. I just love the way that team played and always did. And to see it broken up that way. And then I saw Steph Curry with the post. Gonna miss you, Klay Thompson. Even though we won't finish the journey together, what we did will never be done again. Couldn't have imagined a better run with you and Money 23 Green. Changed the whole Bay Area. Changed the way the game is played. Kill a Clay at the center of it all. Thank you for everything, bro. Go enjoy playing basketball and doing what you do. Splash Bros for life, my guy. Splash Bros for life. It got me good. Feel free to laugh at me, Danny. Whatever. I love beautiful, beautiful team sports, and I thought they played a beautiful brand of team sports. I'm sorry to see it end.
Listen, if the idea, if the category is out of town teams that you loved watching, I agree with you. They changed basketball forever. I actually don't think that they changed basketball for the good forever. Like, those guys should have shot threes at a historic rate. I don't love that every team in the league now takes 35 or more threes per game and plays the same brand of basketball. That's not the Warriors' fault. That's math's fault. But they were the best to ever do it, and someone will come around and beat some of their records in terms of three-point proficiency, because that number is not going down. It's going up in terms of 3 points per game. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, man, I mean, Clay is... I mean, I was at the game at the United Center where he set the single game record for 3-pointers made. I mean, he had more made threes than dribbles in the first half. Like, it was, you know what I mean? He's one of the craziest basketball players, one of the most singular basketball players ever to be that good of a shooter, but not need the ball in his hand, but then also be an awesome defensive player in his prime. His defense has fallen off the last couple of
years. But he was the best two-way two-guard for a while there in the NBA.
So, I mean, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. He's an excellent, excellent basketball player, and it is the end of an era.
But don't you think they're up there with, like, you know, with the Gretzky Oilers, and some would say certainly the Mahomes Chiefs with Tyreek Hill and Kelsey, you know, with like just some of the most beautiful, explosive offensive teams, the Chris Webber and White Chocolate Warriors, just like, you know, when you would find a team that just played a flashy and beautiful brand of ball that you wish was yours. They were the standard of that for a good 7, 8, 9 years.
Yes, no question about it. And I think that it is undeniably true. I'm trying to think about, like, teams. So I had it a little bit for the Knicks this last, like, couple of years.
And that's interesting, because that's with a certain amount of grit, You know?
Yeah, well, because, you know, I'm removing the beautiful offense. I'm talking about out-of-town teams that you're not supposed to love, but you do.
Yeah.
Because it reminded me of my favorite Bulls teams that weren't Jordan teams, because Derek was there for a while, Taj was there for a while, Tibbs has there been there throughout it. Mm-hmm. It reminded me a lot of 2010, 2011, 2012 Bulls basketball. Great basketball city, great basketball arena, great basketball fan base. All that. So, like, I was drawn to Knicks games and rooting for, like, it was weird because, like, growing up, a kid in the 90s, you hate the Knicks. And it was like, man, I wish this was somewhere else. But if it was somewhere else, it also wouldn't be the same when you see Tracy Morgan and Ben Stiller and Howard Stern and John Stewart, yeah, and all the comedians going crazy, like, sitting courtside. And it's like, man, it's cool. Like, they brought MSG back to life with, like, for lack of a better word, Bulls-style basketball from, mm-hmm, the early 2010s. So recently I've really found myself enjoying watching the Knicks.
Yeah.
And I plan to – I think that that'll still be a thing this upcoming season.
Oh, my
season.
God, yeah. They're going to be even more interesting with Mikal Bridges now. It's going to be a thing. Hey, one more thing on Steph. Did you happen to see the article about him showing up at a
like a pickup game?
Thank you. At a pickup game, Steph was in Sacramento for his daughter's athletic competition, and word got through an intermediary to, like, a guy who, like, has coached some NBAers and former NBAers that Steph was looking for a place to just run, place to run some ball. This was during the NBA playoffs. So this guy called some of his regulars that showed up at the pickup game and said, yeah, you're not going to want to miss this one. Just make sure you come to this one. I'll send you the article. It's unbelievable. And so the best players said, oh, I guess something's up. And they showed up, and Steph was there. And he was unbelievable. Somebody filmed the whole thing and put it out.
Oh, was he the best player on the court?
He was unsurprisingly the best player on the court. But he was also, like, dapping up everybody, setting up other people, like, having fun. And people were, like, force-feeding him. And he said, no, let's just play team ball. Just play team ball. Wherever the shot is, that's what we take. That's what we take. And just made it freaking awesome as a dude and as a player for absolutely everybody in the gym.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, he's an interesting guy because, like, rankings and NBA debates, and it's like barbershop style, and it's awesome. He's not a top five player of all time. But if the conversation is, you know, the aliens are coming and we need to win a basketball game, give me your all-time starting five, he's absolutely on your team because he's the best shooter of all time.
Yeah.
So the most valuable shot's the three-point shot, and he's the best at it, unquestionably. So
he can distribute, too. If need be, he can absolutely handle and distribute. He's,
you know,
it.
But, like, you would say, okay, you know, Kareem, Magic, Michael, LeBron, like, you'd name five players who are better than Steph Curry all around, but if it's like, I need a team to win a basketball game, Steph Curry has to be on your starting five all time.
Yeah, I'll go with a Steph and MJ backcourt. I feel pretty good about that.
It'd be pretty good.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty damn good. So, yeah.
Sorry, Magic.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Steph, Michael.
Steph and Michael in the backcourt.
LeBron and KD on the wing.
I don't know.
You won't even give it up to LeBron, the guy who's incredible at everything.
Yeah.
And then I need KD for the shoot. Like, if you're doing LeBron and Jordan, your four needs to be a great shooter.
You need a, okay, well, how about Larry Bird? Could I have Larry Bird as my four? I mean, he's more of a three, obviously. I think I'd take Larry Bird over LeBron.
Okay. Yeah. I'll take LeBron.
Okay. I'll take Larry.
I'll take LeBron.
You can have him.
Who's our center?
A center. I go Akeem. But that,
all right, I'm in it.
But that's me. Akeem, just an offensive, just a demon and a rim protector as well. I go again.
All right, I'm fine with that. It's a good team we have. Peter Ponderings is next.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Parkinson Spiegel. Yeah. Sounds like the law firm you call when you get a parking ticket. Yeah.
Afternoons on the Score.
I miss a day and the intern gets the 440 segment. Is that what's happening?
Very good, Danny. Thank you.
It's time for Peter's Ponderings.
Yeah, so I was kind of bugged by something I saw on Twitter over the weekend.
Oh. We give our intern, Peter, one segment a day to program as he sees fit.
Intern, although I don't like that word, the terminology.
If you like pina coladas, getting caught in the rain.
Peter's Ponderings.
Yeah, I've heard Dave Roberts is like a really bad guy.
Peter's Ponderings with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Hanson's 21st birthday, and he's spending it pondering with us and having Rinaldi's. I don't know if he had the hot honey soppressata, the Danny Parkin special. I don't know if it came from the West Loop location or the Lincoln Park location, but I know that Rinaldi's always answers the bell for the Parkinson Spiegel Show, and you should support the people that support the show. They are the sponsor of the undefeated Odyssey softball team. They are going to be back for the Radiothon in a big way. If you want to get involved, 670radiothon@gmail.com. That's on August 15th. But they gave us pizza for Peter's last day with the afternoon show.
And chicken fingers. Peter, I hope you had a chicken finger as well.
It was delicious.
Right?
Happy birthday, Mike.
And now you've gotten that. Do you know what voice that is, Peter? You're a young man. It's okay if you don't. It'll just break everybody's heart.
Happy birthday, Mike.
Who is that, Peter?
I hope it wasn't a 1999 Chicago Bull and we got no shot at that one.
We know that from categories. That's Harry Carey. That's Harry Carey saying happy birthday to Mike North. And no matter what your name is, when it's your birthday, that's the greeting that you get.
Happy birthday, Mike.
On this Thank show. You, Harry.
Yeah.
How happy birthday to Mike Peter Pondering Hanson. What are you pondering today on your 21st birthday, young Peter?
Yeah, I mentioned yesterday I had some pre-planned ponderings. But they have since changed. I'll tell you what the pre-planned ones were, because Tanny liked the idea so
much.
Wait,
are we calling an audible here? Okay, yeah. Let's hear it. Yeah, what do you got, Peter?
Well, so I only thought it was fair, since I had to sing last week, that I made you guys sing today. And I was going to make you sing Happy Birthday to Me, but I don't think that's the right idea. So
I still think it's the right idea. I told Peter, I said, this is your segment. Don't back down to them.
Sure.
I will egg them on if they don't do it.
Peter's orders is not a segment I signed up for. Peter's mandates.
Make us do something that's interesting. No. Go on. What's your other idea?
Yeah.
Peter?
Yeah.
Drunk with power, this guy.
The real pondering is I'm pondering how purely pathetic this Cubs team is. I'm really, really tired of watching this team. And I've come to a realization that watching this Cubs team makes me feel like a sucker. And I've realized being a Cubs fan in general makes me feel that way.
Wow.
You look, and I'm not going to step on your guys' toes, because I know you're going to touch on this in the 5 o'clock hour. That's
yeah,
a
so
tease.
You don't might not want to give that up at 4:49, but go ahead, ponder away.
But
happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Peter Pondering Hanson.
Mike.
Happy birthday to you.
So why do you feel like a sucker? Why do you feel like a sucker, Peter?
Well, I feel like one right now, because when the Cubs go down one run, I feel like you can't get that back. And I find myself watching the game over and over and over again every single night, and then they don't do anything. And it's not like, at least, it's not like there's even some hope. There's just nothing. And I feel like a sucker for continuing to watch. And not only that, but, you know, going back, getting my hopes up every single offseason and thinking to myself, oh, there's a chance at this and there's a chance at that. And then, you know, eventually it proves to be that maybe there was never any real talk of any sort of big signing.
What year is this? 2014 or 2024? You're 21. You remember the Cubs winning the World Series
when
this
he was 13, Danny?
I was 13. Yeah,
13 this is years
this
old.
This is the type of talk of like I feel like a sucker. They're never going to come through.
Mm-hmm.
That Cubs fans did for generations. I'm not saying they should still be living off of what they accomplished in 2016. They definitely shouldn't be. But this idea that like Peter's had it rough as a Cubs fan.
Well, see, I remember I saw this when Red Sox fans won and then immediately a couple years later turned back into miserable Red Sox fans who were like, this franchise never does anything. Well, what about that time when you went, oh, they never do anything. So, Peter, do you come by this honestly? Do you have parents or elders in your life that are Cub fans?
Yeah, Dad's a diehard Cubs fan.
Okay, so Dad had a couple decades of feeling this way. And now you are putting it on like a warm overcoat that you have inherited from your father. Does it feel comfortable in that way to you, sir?
Not really.
Oh.
I'm pretty well. Yes, in the sense that you know the whole lovable losers thing and everything like that. But right now, I don't love these losers. I don't. And Tanny's been getting on me this week about complaining about the Cubs.
Yeah, and Sean Sears. Yeah, you heard me speak. So you
yes,
walked in at the tail end
I
of
did,
that. Both
I did.
Of these guys, like, you know, Danny just made the point. Like, every time they say something about the Cubs and the, you know, the whole thing, it's just like, hey, less than 10 years ago, World Series. And I know these young guys, it's different because it's literally half a lifetime ago, you know, but I remember it vividly. And the memories of my World Series for my team are starting to fade a bit. You know what I mean? So,
well, yeah, and have some respect for the White Sox fan in the room when talking about Cubs problems.
What I had said was, you guys are going through this year. Imagine generously like three consecutive years of this by now. And with many more to come with the rebuild on the verge, you know, the pre-build, as we've been calling it, you know. Mm-hmm. So imagine that life where you cannot go watch a baseball game without thinking, is this the bottom or are we going to go even farther down? So, you know, consider yourself lucky you saw one at a young age. I know you want to see more. I know you want to see more, but be a little grateful for it, huh? Would you? Yeah, how old a man is your dad? He's got to be close to my age. Probably speaks his age, right? You know,
there's no way.
Was he about 50? How old of a man is your dad?
Like 60.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
All right, yeah. So
it's got me beat.
So yeah, my dad's around that age. He's content. He saw the one. Your dad should probably feel content too.
Your dad's good on the one
because his dad never saw the one.
No,
he passed away in March of 2005. You know, so it's all a matter of perspective. You know,
yeah, it's cruel like that. I understand where Peter is coming from on some levels that we will discuss in the next hour. But Danny, you as the wizened old timer, you can look at Peter and realize that he doesn't have a right to these feelings that he has from your perspective. Do I have that
frankly,
correct?
Frankly, he sounds ridiculous. Making demands of us. Good luck getting those demands through the, you know, the dictatorship that is Mully and Haw.
Mm-hmm.
With Dustin.
You better only come in wearing Flag and Anthem stuff if you know what's good for you.
I'd also like to clarify that I never said anything about the morning show.
Yeah, you said all kinds of stuff.
You said you hate him.
Yeah. You didn't like him? He said he didn't like the Irish. Did you guys hear that part? I was like, wow, that's a broad brush.
And newspapers. He said it was fake media. I think.
Come on, we all know Peter's never seen an actual newspaper. Come on.
I actually have the sports section of the Tribune in my backpack right now.
Good man.
You're going to fit in great over there.
Peter Pander.
Peter's pandering.
Peter's panderings. That's his morning show segment.
Just got to change the vowel.
Peter's panderings. On 6:40 after the pick six.
That's when the extra point is, Danny. Come on.
I'm sorry.
We didn't make it today, Speece.
Oh, no. We didn't?
Our little drops didn't make it.
Oh, we really were trying.
That's why we tried. That's an excellent question. I should try every day.
That sounds like a good drop for the pick six. Just keep doing it every day.
You know, if I can, I'd like to make one extra point.
Well, you have an opportunity to do that. Our Craig Council interview got a lot of discussion, so if you missed it, that's coming up in 30 minutes. I got big things coming professionally I want to share before we're out of here. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. Woo!
you get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Those radio losers, nobody cares about them.
Afternoons on the Score.
3-2. Out to center. Walking back to the bag is Jimenez. He will tag at third. Here could no throw, and that's the ball game. Emil Jimenez caught both ways next time. That's terrible. That's terrible. Ball game's over. Walking it off, and the White Sox lose the opener.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so gotta be honest. Didn't see it live. Saw it about 5 minutes, 10 minutes after it happened. It was a really, really, really weird ending to that game.
Yeah, I did not see it live. I was at Cubs last night, and my phone started blowing up about it. Had not heard the TV call because I'd gone on and watched the condensed game on MLB.com and seen some other stuff. Didn't realize the umpire got some ire there after.
Well, the at bat, it was an 0-2 count, and Kopech threw a ball that looked like a strike on the K-Vision that came across just at the bottom of the zone. And so it looked like it should have been a 3-pitch punch out. And the game would have obviously remained tied. But then he spiked a pitch.
Yeah, and I saw that. Like, he caught a spike on the mound on the way down.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, I think what he's referring to is the non-strike three call.
Yes.
The non-strike three call, which was a great pitch. It probably was a strike, but again, we don't have automated balls and strikes. In a world where there's a challenge system, if you still had a challenge left, you'd use that one, and it probably would have gotten overturned based on the TV graphic. Anyway, based on the TV graphic, it was a strike. But it was so weird, and it's game of inches, all of those cliches, man. Like, it's a great at bat by Kopech. It's a great job. Like, if that pitch is called a strike, 3-pitch strikeout, runner in scoring position, stranded, inning over, you know, tie game. Then it's 1-2. The next pitch, he spikes the ball, throws it 2 feet, and the training staff comes out. Like, what the hell was that? Did you hurt yourself? Like, it was so now all of a sudden it's like, okay, things are unraveling. There's a runner on third instead of second because he, you know, wild pitched it.
And we're under two outs, so all you need is the sacrifice fly to have the winning run come in.
Correct. And so by the way, I guess if that would have been strike three call, it would not have been a guarantee that they would have gotten out of it, but you would have not had the spiked ball, which you would have had the runner advance to third, and you would have needed a base hit with two outs to win instead of the sacrifice fly. And then the sacrifice fly happens, and Luis Robert doesn't get under the ball and even make a throw. Probably was too deep to matter anyway, but
not
you've got
to
make a play.
You have to make a play. And just a chaotically, dim thought from Luis to not get under it. And what we have seen is him not doing some of the basic fundamentals of center field play for a long, long time. I mean, it's got to be 4 years, at least 3 years, since I remember going off on a rant about him not getting under a fly ball to make a throw specifically for a sacrifice fly and being so angry. I remember still the visceral anger of being like, Daryl Boston is a loyalty hire who remains as a as an outfield coach and a base coach who obviously is not teaching these guys anything, and they have to learn at the big league level because the farm system is bad. But anyway, here we are this far into the dude's career, a five-tool player supposedly, not knowing and executing fundamentally what you're supposed to do was absolutely horrific to watch on that play.
Yeah, it was really, really bad. Again, you said it doesn't matter. If the ball would have been hit 380 feet,
what
you're
we're
not
saying,
trying.
What doesn't matter? What
you mean? Said it doesn't matter that the ball was probably too deep that he can't even make the runner's scoring either way.
Well, what I mean is you make the throw because a guy could fall, a guy could trip.
Correct.
I mean anything could happen.
Miss home plate.
Hey, you could miss home plate and then you've got him. I mean you get under it. It's the fundamentals of like, all right, get under and when that ball hits your glove, you are ready to have just that little crow hop and throw. You're in
right,
position.
You're charging into the ball so that you can get maximum velocity on the throw to give yourself a chance, even if it's a 1% or 2% chance.
I remember being the bat boy for my older brother's high school team when they had outfield practice and he was being taught how to deal with a sacrifice fly. And then we would watch the Red Sox outfield of Fred Lynn and Jim Rice and Dwight Evans, and they all did it right. I mean, what the hell? It's still the most basic stuff in baseball, and the White Sox are such a broken organization that absolute jewels of the team come all the way up and still don't know how to do it when they've been in the big leagues for years. It's insane.
Well, I'm sure Tom Hamilton, who's had a thought or three on the White Sox from afar, I'm sure he handled the call with an appropriate amount of grace.
Now the 0-2. And it just missed low. If it did miss... One ball, two strikes. I don't think the White Sox are inviting Emil Jimenez to their team party later this year. The 1-2. And it goes all the way to the backstop. And it went behind the batter as Kopech stumbled, making his delivery to home plate. And now the winning run at third. May have caught a spike in delivering that ball as it just went flying out of his hand to the backstop behind the hitter. He almost fell down delivering it. And now the winning run 90 feet from home, and now the White Sox have to bring the infield in. A 2-2 count. One out. A 6-6 game in the ninth. And now Charlie Montoyo, the bench coach and former Toronto Blue Jays manager, is coming out to the mound with the White Sox trainer to make sure Kopech is okay. One out, 6-6 in the ninth. Everybody on their feet at the corner of Carnegie and Ontario. Kopech is ready. Here's the 2-2 pitch. High, and he almost threw it away. Martin Maldonado with a leaping grab, and the count is full. And for Kopech, he may be a little bit rattled. He's uncorked 5 wild pitches this year. Winning run at third and a full count with one down in the ninth. The payoff pitch. A swing and a high fly, medium deep center. This will be interesting. Robert makes the catch, tagging Jimenez. The throw to the plate, nowhere near in time. Ball game is over. A game-winning sacrifice fly. As Bo Naylor walks off the White Sox twice, Luis Robert took a strange approach to that fly ball to medium deep center. He drifted back on it. He never went back, then charged it with his momentum, taking him to home plate. And the Guardians get a bizarre win tonight on a sack fly by Bo Naylor and beat the White Sox 7-6.
So odd.
Dude, so we're tracking new ways for the White Sox to lose.
Yeah.
Add it to the list.
Yeah, man. Like they continue to be an improv comic giving you absolute gold nightly. They're the Robin Williams of losing. And that is a new one. I've never seen the sacrifice fly where they don't even bother to make a throw.
Well, you have, but it's like when it's been, like I said, 380 feet. You know what I mean? When it's super deep, when you're going back on a ball, like when there's no chance for it. But a ball at that depth, there's always a throw in.
Even then, I feel like they turn and they throw it just in case dude falls down or in case something happens. It's like certainly not at that depth. Does he not care? You'd never want to put that on a guy.
It's a horrible look.
It's a horrible look, and it's frankly, it's just a really weird bad baseball instinct to show off and add to the pile as the trade deadline approaches. It really is.
I saw a lot of that online, actually. The clip was circulating on a few of the the MLB accounts, not the official Major League Baseball accounts, but the foul territories and the MLB social media channels. And I was just checking the comments, and it was like a lot of Phillies fans being like, "Eh, no thanks," for whatever that's worth, which is probably nothing, but definitely a lot of teams that are in the buyer's market that have seen reports of Robert being available that have had their team linked to him, seeing that play and be like, "Ugh." That's unappetizing.
And Pedro Grifol after the game said that it was too deep, right? Said it was too deep, and it's just, you shouldn't even be picking
apart. He did not
take
a public stance of having a problem with it. No.
Yeah. The thing is
Robert had a really good game offensively. He said he didn't think he had a chance in the last play. Is that what you kind of said?
First of all, he's playing in, because there's one out. Ball was hit 309 feet, 310 feet. He's playing in. He's going back. Even if he runs back and comes in, there's no play there. I mean, if we're going to dissect that, we're making something out of nothing. Really, you're not going to throw that guy out from there.
All right, cutting his guy a break, making an apology for his guy. I mean, that fits. Look, Pedro has not said anything publicly. I mean, other than the one time where he said we are flat and effing flat. And, and his own guys were like, no, we were not. We very much disagree with that. I mean, Pedro has stood by his guys to complete and utter extents.
Yeah.
Man.
I mean, I'd like to know, is there, there's got to be data. There's data on your sport for everything. On deepest fly ball where a guy has been thrown out at the plate. It probably would have taken tripping and falling, missing home plate, rupturing an Achilles. You know what I mean? Probably would have taken an act of God.
Look, it's just the latest example of innumerable examples of them in terms of fundamental things. And just when you have an org that is broken from the top on down in like how to build stuff, how to teach stuff, how to deliver finished products, or at least mostly finished products, to the big leagues, you get stuff like this. When you have chaos like all through your organization, and maybe the new guys, Barfield and Bannister, and yes, Getz can try to right a ship, but it is a big operation that takes years to set up correctly. And when it's not set up correctly, you get stuff like this as just a symptom where your best player, your five-tool jewel, has a moment like that. And we're all realizing what an incomplete player he actually is. So what a bummer, man.
The other high-profile White Sox who's been linked in trade stuff, this from Scott Merkin 15 minutes ago, who covers the Sox, asked Pedro if Crochet's last first-half start could be Saturday in Miami, again watching his innings. His reply, quote, "We have it mapped out in a way where if he's selected to the All-Star game, he'll be available to pitch. I think that's extremely important."
That's cool.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if the team was in contention and he was on this innings limit, you'd want it saved. But given that he's having beyond a career year, one of the best seasons of any pitcher in all of baseball, and you're going exactly nowhere, let the guy have the moment of using an inning in the All-Star game. I think that's totally fine.
Yeah. I hope for Sox fan this org finds a way to drag itself out of the muck and become something more than a laughing stock.
Yeah, me too. And that's my problem with perpetual rebuilds is when you get these prospects, they're coming from all these different systems. And it's like, why are these teams giving up on these guys? Sometimes it's because they don't know how to play baseball the right way. And they're learning the game from different people in different orgs. So when they all come here, no one's on the same page almost ever. And like you said, Speaks, hopefully they're beginning now because I know they've got smart people in place. Mm-hmm. But that stuff takes years.
Right. Did you guys cover this? It was a day that I was off. The stuff that Tobias Myers, who's been a nice surprise as a pitcher for the Brewers, said in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the White Sox. Because he was there in 2022 and it didn't go well.
I know we talked about it in the group thread that day. I don't remember if we did it on the show, Danny.
Yeah, I think it didn't make the show that day.
Seven starts for Tobias Myers when he was with the White Sox in the minors. An ERA north of 15 and got DFA'd back to the market. And Myers has been a big part of what the Brewers have done. They're scrambling, but he's been a nice part of what the Brewers have done. Here's what Myers said about the White Sox in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last week. Quote, "They just can't help anyone, in my opinion. Maybe they've changed a little bit since then, but I always tell people now that if you don't have anything figured out, don't go to the White Sox," unquote. Now that's a dude who's been DFA'd by a bunch of people, bounced around a bunch of organizations, and it's rough because a lot of these guys, they become creations when an organization unlocks something or figures something out, whether it's a pitch mix or they teach them something or they find something technically or whatever it is. And he's not the first one, nor will he be the last one to voice that opinion about the White Sox, that they're not going to fix you when you get here. Remember Lucas Giolito going outside the org. Remember Danny Farquhar coming back from a time in Tampa Bay, and they're like, "Oh, you know stuff you learned in Tampa? Would you please now just work for us instead as a pitcher on a redemption trip?"
They ended that's up what Bannister was supposed to change, though.
Yeah, but it's baseball's a big bus that makes a slow turn. I hope that Bannister can change some stuff. But it's kind of like asking counsel to be like a partner of a GM and fix a whole bunch of things in the organization in half a year. You know, it's like it's a big bus and it makes a slow turn.
You went to a baseball game with a member of the Rolling Stones last night. We haven't gotten nearly enough stories about that. We have Peter's Ponderings in 20 minutes, and this is going to shock exactly no one. But Speaks is getting a little sports sentimental. Those are the kind of vibes we need around these parts with all these bad teams we're covering. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Doing it and doing it and doing it.
Afternoons on the Score.
Draymond, you are such a...
Clay Thompson, yeah. Splash Brothers, yeah. Cavaliers, nope. We won, yeah. They suck, yeah. We here, yeah. They not, nope.
The last Peter Ponderings coming up as we lose the intern, Peter Hansen, to the morning show after two valiant weeks with us. But Speaks, you are a bit of a romantic, a bit of an optimist, and you found yourself feeling sadness at the end of one of the great dynasties and at times unfair cheat codes in modern sports history being broken up.
You're laughing at me, Danny.
I am laughing at you a little bit.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
Yeah. It's not nice.
I'm sorry.
At a time of sadness.
I know.
Yeah. It's your game.
This is bringing you great pain in your life.
It's actually not bringing me great pain. Just a little sports sadness. You ever just truly love a team that is not one of your own locally? And every time you get a chance to watch them, they bring you an incredible amount of joy. It hasn't been as joyful, obviously, in the last year or two, but I've still found myself believing in them because of the joy that I've always gotten. Watching Steph Curry and Klay Thompson play, especially under Steve Kerr, has been some of the most beautiful basketball and some of the most beautiful team sports that I feel like we've gotten to watch as a people in a long, long time. Yes, the fact that they were for a while the best and probably second best shooter in the game, and we will go with Steph as the best shooter of all time, and Klay in his prime as one of the best shooters of all time. Yes, that was a massive cheat code, but it was just
Well, I was talking about that when the cap spiked and then they added Kevin Durant, one of the 10 best offensive players of all time.
But I'm thinking about when they won it with Iguodala, when Sean Livingston had a new chapter of his career and won a title there. You know, just like all the different people that have cycled through there. And yes, Durant was definitely a bit of a cheat code that felt like a star gathering thing that I have often loathed, and then all of a sudden was in there. But it's largely about Steph, and it's about the way that Steph and Clay have played together, and a weird kind of selflessness from a very odd figure in Draymond. It's a very weird brand of selflessness, because maybe it's...
you and Draymond actually have something in common.
Yeah, what's that?
On the Draymond Green show, he's emotional over the breaking up of the Splash Brothers.
I don't really know how I feel about it. Clay told us last week, I don't know who all he told, but I know he talked to me. Pretty sure he talked to Steph last week. And he just kind of was like, yeah, man, like, you know, just kind of start talking through the years, like, been great. What we've done is so special. Like, when Clay told me, I was just able to listen, you know, and it wasn't like a, yo, we could finish like this, or like, you should rethink this. It was just like, wow, like, all right, like, congrats, bro. Like, I'm happy for you. That's dope. And like, you know, to obviously reassure that changes nothing for us, you know, like, changes the basketball court, obviously. But the relationships, they are what they are. They are forever. I think I might have dropped a couple tears, a tear or two.
Man, I feel you, Draymond. I just love the way that team played and always did. And to see it broken up that way. And then I saw Steph Curry with the post. Gonna miss you, Klay Thompson. Even though we won't finish the journey together. What we did will never be done again. Couldn't have imagined a better run with you and Money 23 Green. Changed the whole Bay Area. Changed the way the game is played. Kill a Clay at the center of it all. Thank you for everything, bro. Go enjoy playing basketball and doing what you do. Splash Bros for life, my guy. Splash Bros for life. It got me good. Feel free to laugh at me, Danny. Whatever. I love beautiful, beautiful team sports, and I thought they played a beautiful brand of team sports. I'm sorry to see it end.
Listen, if the idea, if the category is out of town teams that you loved watching, I agree with you. They changed basketball forever. I actually don't think that they changed basketball for the good forever. Like, those guys should have shot threes at a historic rate. I don't love that every team in the league now takes 35 or more threes per game and plays the same brand of basketball. That's not the Warriors' fault. That's math's fault. But they were the best to ever do it, and someone will come around and beat some of their records in terms of three-point proficiency, because that number is not going down. It's going up in terms of 3 points per game. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, man, I mean, Clay is... I mean, I was at the game at the United Center where he set the single game record for 3-pointers made. I mean, he had more made threes than dribbles in the first half. Like, it was, you know what I mean? He's one of the craziest basketball players, one of the most singular basketball players ever, to be that good of a shooter but not need the ball in his hand, but then also be an awesome defensive player in his prime. His defense has fallen off the last couple of
years.
But
he was the best two-way two-guard for a while there in the NBA.
So, I mean, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. He's an excellent, excellent basketball player, and it is the end of an era.
But don't you think they're up there with, like, you know, with the Gretzky Oilers, and some would say certainly the Mahomes Chiefs with Tyreek Hill and Kelsey, you know, with like just some of the most beautiful, explosive offensive teams, the Chris Webber and White Chocolate Warriors, just like, you know, when you would find a team that just played a flashy and beautiful brand of ball that you wish was yours. They were the standard of that for a good 7, 8, 9 years.
Yes, no question about it. And I think that it is undeniably true. I'm trying to think about, like, teams. So I had it a little bit for the Knicks this last, like, couple of years.
And that's interesting, because that's with a certain amount of grit You know?
Yeah, well, because, you know, I'm removing the beautiful offense. I'm talking about out-of-town teams that you're not supposed to love, but you do.
Yeah.
Because it reminded me of my favorite Bulls teams that weren't Jordan teams, because Derek was there for a while, Taj was there for a while, Tibbs has there been there throughout it. Mm-hmm. It reminded me a lot of 2010, 2011, 2012 Bulls basketball. Great basketball city, great basketball arena, great basketball fan base. All that. So, like, I was drawn to Knicks games and rooting for, like, it was weird because, like, growing up, a kid in the 90s, you hate the Knicks. And it was like, man, I wish this was somewhere else. But if it was somewhere else, it also wouldn't be the same when you see Tracy Morgan and Ben Stiller and Howard Stern and Jon Stewart, yeah, and all the comedians going crazy, like, sitting courtside. It's like, man, it's cool. Like, they brought MSG back to life with, like, for lack of a better word, Bulls-style basketball from, mm-hmm, the early 2010s. So recently I've really found myself enjoying watching the Knicks.
Yeah.
And I plan to – I think that that'll still be a thing this upcoming season.
Oh, my
season.
God, yeah. They're going to be even more interesting with Mikal Bridges now. It's going to be a thing. Hey, one more thing on Steph. Did you happen to see the article about him showing up at a
like a pickup game?
Thank you. At a pickup game, Steph was in Sacramento for his daughter's athletic competition, and word got through an intermediary to, like, a guy who, like, has coached some NBAers and former NBAers that Steph was looking for a place to just run, place to run some ball. This was during the NBA playoffs. So this guy called some of his regulars that showed up at the pickup game and said, yeah, you're not going to want to miss this one. Just make sure you come to this one. I'll send you the article. It's unbelievable. And so the best players said, oh, I guess something's up. And they showed up, and Steph was there. And he was unbelievable. Somebody filmed the whole thing and put it out.
Oh, was he the best player on the court?
He was unsurprisingly the best player on the court. But he was also, like, dapping up everybody, setting up other people, like, having fun. And people were, like, force-feeding him. And he said, no, let's just play team ball. Just play team ball. Wherever the shot is, that's what we take. That's what we take. And just made it freaking awesome as a dude and as a player for absolutely everybody in the gym.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, he's an interesting guy because, like, rankings and NBA debates, and it's like barbershop style, and it's awesome. He's not a top five player of all time. But if the conversation is, you know, the aliens are coming and we need to win a basketball game, give me your all-time starting five, he's absolutely on your team because he's the best shooter of all time.
Yeah.
So the most valuable shot's the three-point shot, and he's the best at it unquestionably. So
he can distribute too if need be. He can absolutely handle and distribute. He's,
you know,
it.
But you would say, okay, you know, Kareem, Magic, Michael, LeBron, like, you'd name five players who are better than Steph Curry all around. But if it's like, I need a team to win a basketball game, Steph Curry has to be on your starting five all time.
Yeah, I'll go with a Steph and MJ backcourt. I feel pretty good about that.
It'd be pretty good.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty damn good. So, yeah.
Sorry, Magic.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Steph, Michael.
Steph and Michael in the backcourt.
LeBron and KD on the wing.
I don't know.
You won't even give it up to LeBron, the guy who's incredible at everything.
Yeah.
And then I need KD for the shoot. Like, if you're doing LeBron and Jordan, your four needs to be a great shooter.
You need okay, well, how about Larry Bird? Could I have Larry Bird as my four? I mean, he's more of a three, obviously. I think I'd take Larry Bird over LeBron.
Okay. Yeah. I'll take LeBron.
Okay. I'll take Larry.
I'll take LeBron.
You can have him.
Who's our center?
A center. I go Akeem. But that,
all right, I'm in it.
But that's fine. Me. Akeem, just a demon and a rim protector as well. I go Akeem.
All right, I'm fine with that. It's a good team we have. Peter Ponderings is next.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Parkinson Spiegel. Oh, yeah. Sounds like the law firm you call when you get a parking ticket.
Afternoons on the Score.
I miss a day and the intern gets the 440 segment. Is that what's happening?
Very good, Danny. Thank you.
It's time for Peter's Ponderings.
Yeah, so I was kind of bugged by something I saw on Twitter over the weekend.
Oh. We give our intern, Peter, one segment a day to program as he sees fit.
Intern, although I don't like that word, the terminology.
If you like pina coladas, getting caught in the rain.
Peter's Ponderings.
Yeah, I've heard Dave Roberts is like a really bad guy.
Peter's Ponderings with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Hanson's 21st birthday, and he's spending it pondering with us and having Rinaldi's. I don't know if he had the hot honey soppressata, the Danny Parkin special. I don't know if it came from the West Loop location or the Lincoln Park location, but I know that Rinaldi's always answers the bell for the Parkinson Spiegel Show, and you should support the people that support the show. They are the sponsor of the undefeated Odyssey softball team. They are going to be back for the Radiothon in a big way. If you want to get involved, 670radiothon@gmail.com. That's on August 15th. But they gave us pizza for Peter's last day with the afternoon show.
And chicken fingers. Peter, I hope you had a chicken finger as well.
It was delicious.
Right?
Happy birthday, Mike.
And now you've gotten that. Do you know what voice that is, Peter? You're a young man. It's okay if you don't. It'll just break everybody's heart.
Happy birthday, Mike.
Who is that, Peter?
I hope he wasn't a 1999 Chicago Bull and we got no shot at that one.
We know that from categories. That's Harry Carey. That's Harry Carey saying happy birthday to Mike North. And no matter what your name is, when it's your birthday, that's the greeting that you get.
Happy birthday, Mike.
Thank you, Harry.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to Mike Peter Pondering Hanson. What are you pondering today on your 21st birthday, young Peter?
Yeah, I mentioned yesterday I had some pre-planned ponderings. But they have since changed. I'll tell you what the pre-planned ones were, because Danny liked the idea so much.
Oh, wait. Oh, are we calling an audible here? Okay, yeah. Let's hear it. Yeah, what do you got, Peter?
Well, so I only thought it was fair since I had to sing last week that I made you guys sing today. And I was going to make you sing Happy Birthday to Me, but I don't think that's the right idea. So
I still think it's the right idea. I told Peter, I said, this is your segment. Don't back down to them.
Sure.
I will egg them on if they don't do it.
Peter's orders is not a segment I signed up for. Peter's mandates.
Make us do something is interesting. No. Go on. What's your other idea?
Yeah.
Peter?
Yeah.
Drunk with power, this guy.
The real pondering is I'm pondering how purely pathetic this Cubs team is. I'm really, really tired of watching this team. And I've come to a realization that watching this Cubs team makes me feel like a sucker. And I've realized being a Cubs fan in general makes me feel that way.
Wow.
You look, and I'm not going to step on your guys' toes because I know you're going to touch on this in the 5 o'clock hour. That's
yeah, so you don't might not want to give that up at 4:49, but go ahead, pop it away.
But
happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Peter Pondering Hanson.
Mike.
Happy birthday to you.
So why do you feel like a sucker? Why do you feel like a sucker, Peter?
Well, I feel like one right now because when the Cubs go down one run, I feel like you can't get that back. And I find myself watching the game over and over and over again every single night, and then they don't do anything. And it's not like it's not like there's even some hope. There's just nothing. And I feel like a sucker for continuing to watch. And not only that, but, you know, going back, getting my hopes up every single offseason and thinking to myself, oh, there's a chance at this and there's a chance at that. And then, you know, eventually it proves to be that maybe there was never any real talk of any sort of big signing.
What year is this? 2014 or 2024? You're 21. You remember the Cubs winning the World Series.
When this he was 13, Danny.
I was 13, yeah.
This 13 is, years
this
old.
Is, this is the type of talk of, like, I feel like a sucker. They're never going to come through that Cubs fans did for generations. I'm not saying they should still be living off of what they accomplished in 2016. They definitely shouldn't be. But this idea that, like, Peter's had it rough as a Cubs fan.
Well, see, I remember I saw this when Red Sox fans won and then immediately a couple years later turned back into miserable Red Sox fans who were like, this franchise never does anything. Well, what about that time when you went, oh, they never do anything. So, Peter, do you come by this honestly? Do you have parents or elders in your life that are Cub fans?
Yeah, Dad's a diehard Cubs fan.
Okay, so Dad had a couple decades of feeling this way. And now you are putting it on like a warm overcoat that you have inherited from your father. Does it feel comfortable in that way to you, sir?
Not really. Yes, in the sense that, you know, the whole lovable losers thing and everything like that. But right now, I don't love these losers. I don't. And Tanny's been getting on me this week about complaining about the Cubs.
Yeah, and Sean Sears. Yeah, you heard me speak. So you walked in at the tail end of that. Both of these guys, like, you know, Danny just made the point. Like, every time they say something about the Cubs and the, you know, the whole thing, it's just like, hey, less than 10 years ago, World Series. And I know these young guys, it's different because it's literally half a lifetime ago, you know, but I remember it vividly. And the memories of my World Series or my team are starting to fade a bit. You know what I mean? So,
well, yeah, and have some respect for the White Sox fan in the room when talking about Cubs problems.
What I had said was, you guys are going through this year. Imagine generously like three consecutive years of this by now. And then with many more to come with the rebuild on the verge, you know, the pre-build, as we've been calling it, you know. So imagine that life where you cannot go watch a baseball game without thinking, is this the bottom, or are we going to go even farther down? So, you know, consider yourself lucky you saw one at a young age. I know you want to see more, but be a little grateful for it, huh? Would you? How old a man is your dad? He's got to be close to my age. Probably speaks his age, right? You know,
there's no way.
Was he about 50? How old a man is your dad?
Like 60.
Oh, okay, yeah, all right, yeah. So
he's got me beat.
So yeah, my dad's probably around that age. He's content. He saw the one. Your dad should probably feel content too.
Your dad's good on the one
because his dad never saw the one.
No,
he passed away in March of 2005. You know, so it's all a matter of perspective. You know,
yeah, it's cruel like that. I understand where Peter is coming from on some levels that we will discuss in the next hour. But Danny, you, as the wizened old timer, you can look at Peter and realize that he doesn't have a right to these feelings that he has from your perspective. Do I have that
correct?
Frankly,
he sounds ridiculous. Making demands of us. Good luck getting those demands through the dictatorship that is Mully and Haw with Dustin.
You better only come in wearing flag and anthem stuff if you know what's good for you.
I'd also like to clarify that I never said anything about the morning show.
Yeah, you said all kinds of stuff.
You said you hate him.
Yeah. You didn't like him? He said he didn't like the Irish. Did you guys hear that part? I was like, wow, that's a broad brush.
And newspapers. He said it was fake media. I think.
Come on. We all know Peter's never seen an actual newspaper. Come on.
I actually have the sports section of the Tribune in my backpack right now.
Good man.
You're going to fit in great over there.
Peter Pander.
Peter's pandering.
Peter's panderings. That's his morning show segment.
Just got to change the vowel.
Peter's panderings. on 6:40 after the pick six.
That's when the extra point is, Danny. Come on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We didn't make it today, Speaks.
Oh, no. We didn't?
Our little drops didn't make it.
We really tried.
That's an excellent question. I should try every day.
That sounds like a good drop for the pick six. Just keep doing it every day.
You know, if I can, I'd like to make one extra point.
Well, you have an opportunity to do that. Our Craig Counsell interview got a lot of discussion, so if you missed it, that's coming up in 30 minutes. I got big things coming professionally I want to share before we're out of here. It's Parkins and Spiegel on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.